Welcome to episode 79 of Speaking of Mysteries. Our guest is Barry Lancet, whose Pacific Burn, the third novel in his series featuring Jim Brodey, the PI who straddles a number of worlds, including San Francisco and Japan, is scheduled for publication tomorrow, February 9th. One of the wonderful things about crime fiction is that the authors can set their compelling stories anywhere in time and space. Fans get to not just immerse themselves in a mystery, but another country and culture as well. This is especially true with Barry's series because it features a Caucasian detective who was born in Tokyo, is fluent in both English and Japanese, and maintains a foothold in each world. In San Francisco, Jim Brodey is a dealer in Japanese art. In Tokyo, he owns and runs the detective agency founded by his father. To tell us more about Jim Brodey and his world, here's Barry Lancet. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. I'm delighted to have Barry Lancet on the program, who writes one of the more unique series of an American, not an American in Paris, an American in Japan. And so we'll talk about his protagonist, Jim Brodey. Welcome, Barry.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about your protagonist, Jim Brodey. He's an American who has a dual career as a dealer in Japanese art in San Francisco, which is where you are right now. We're talking to you in San Francisco. And what seems like a very American-style detective agency in Tokyo. On the surface, it seems like your stories are a repudiation of Kipling's East is East and West is West, and Never the Twain Shall Meet. Is that true?
Yes and no. He's Brodey is, as you said, he's got a foot in both worlds. He was born in Tokyo to American Caucasian parents that were there. His father was there for the military, and he learned the language and the culture, and he spent 17, 18 years there, and then he came back to the States. And so he's American, but he knows Japan inside out. And because of that, he's the conduit. He's the one that can look at what's going on over there that normally most of us can't understand, and he can explain exactly what's going on. He's the consummate insider because he knows both cultures.
So he really has the ability to think in both languages, because I think that that's really important to have an understanding of the culture that you happen to be physically part of. So when he's in Japan, he's thinking in Japanese.
That's a very good point. That's absolutely right. It's not just a matter of words and translating a phrase literally. People do think differently in a different language, and that's no more true than it is in Japan, where there is such a exotic and different culture.
Exotic is a good word, and the language and the alphabet for the language, because it's a pictographic alphabet. Am I wrong, or
that's right? That's right. The pictographs, the kanji characters, the characters are actually came from simplified illustrations that were slowly put together to form more complex concepts.
And the lesson will stop there because I'm just not smart enough to grasp it. So as a Westerner who lives in Japan, which is a very homogeneous society, in a nonfiction world, how difficult do you think Jim's task of being a PI in Tokyo and the rest of Japan would be?
When you say nonfiction world, you mean in real life?
In real life.
Well, I don't know. What happens is there are agencies starting to pop up, but there are Japanese agencies that do the equivalent of what a detective security agency would do here. Those have popped up of late, and there is a need for somebody who can move in both worlds, and that's what the agency his father started there is in the fictive world. And because the Japanese tend to be very insular. So when they go overseas, when a VIP, whether it's a celebrity or a politician or a businessman or somebody else that's important, goes overseas and they need something done, they need either protection or they have a problem overseas, they tend to call on one of those kinds of agencies. They need a bilingual agency, to keep it very simple. Bicultural agency, let's say.
So
and that's what it is.
So back to the story, which of course we neglected to mention the name of the book, which is Pacific Burn.
Okay.
So back to Pacific Burn. In this story, the mystery is particularly baffling because someone seems to be killing all the adult members of an esteemed Japanese artist's family. And so Jim has to determine why. And that means that as you described it, this insular society, all the secrets and lies for every member of the family need to be examined. So is there a reason you wanted to put the lives of the Nobuki family in the crosshairs?
Is there a reason I want to? Well, you know, as it starts out, Jim Brody, in Pacific Burn, Jim Brody is asked to help to be a liaison for the mayor of San Francisco's new program, which is a Pacific Rim Friendship Program. And in that program, he's contacted six countries along the Pacific Rim, and he wants to do cultural exchange programs. And so Brody helps him, and he pulls in a Japanese artist to help, a famous Japanese artist, to help coordinate an exchange of art exhibitions, right? And so that's all backstory. That happens before the story starts. And so they're arranging this. They have a beautiful meeting in City Hall, and there's a lot of photo ops. Everybody's shaking hands. Everything's going well. It's all set up. And Brody and his artist friend walk out the door onto the steps of City Hall, and they get attacked. His friend is put in a coma, falls into a coma, and Brody narrowly escapes. And he soon figures out that there was an earlier attack on the artist's family a week ago that didn't make any sense whatsoever. And with this second attack, he begins to see a pattern. But the problem is other people in his family are doing separate things. His daughter is an anti-nuclear activist who's protesting the power meltdown of the power plant in Japan that happened after the earthquake tsunami. And then the artist being very successful in Japan, if he's out of the way, someone gets to step into his place. And that's a position people would like to have. And so there's professional jealousies there. And then there's political opponents of the mayor. Plus there's disgruntled countries that were left out of the mayor's program. So Brody is quite, it becomes an international mystery story.
Exactly. And a sort of a spider's web, as you described it, of all these different threads. And he's, at least initially, as he starts to investigate, he's stumped.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens. And then to complicate matters, it turns out that the daughter, with her father in a coma and her brother killed, this all happens at the beginning, so there aren't really spoilers. Brody goes to D.C., because she's there, he's really worried about her safety. He goes to D.C. to help protect her, and he gets assaulted, I guess is the best word for it, by a task force composed of the CIA and Homeland Security and the FBI. And so really everything is up in the air. People are coming at him from all directions, and he's forced into, you know, he just wants to sell art. He just wants to sell art, but he keeps getting dragged into these cases where he ends up working as a PI detective. So he's kind of a reluctant PI, but he can handle it because he does have street smarts. But this is what always happens.
Right. He has friends, and the friends reach out to them. In the case of the artist that he was escorting out of City Hall, this man makes the tea bowls, and very, very exquisite ones. And it's part of what Brody sells in San Francisco. So there's a personal connection as well as, and it's the personal connection that makes him fall into this mystery, which I kind of like that because he really has more at stake than just business.
Yeah, I think that's really important for these stories. And it also gives me a chance to talk about, since his friend is an artist friend too, there's always some sort of cultural connection in these stories, and so that gives Brody the chance to explore in the story, to explore sort of what I call the high and the low. You've got the criminal element, the stuff that always shows up in crime fiction, and in this case, it's a conspiracy or somebody really after this guy's family for some rather secretive reason. But there's also the cultural aspects. In this case, it's art and T-bowls and a few other things that get woven into the story. So it's kind of a high and a low aspect to it.
Well, you don't neglect food. Cuisine is not neglected on either side of the Pacific. You talk about the wines in Napa and some of the cuisine, the food in Tokyo, the sushi, and specifically the blowfish. But we won't get into that.
Yeah, no, I do. I almost considered becoming a chef way back in the early days. I worked as a second chef once and did several other food-related things, but I dropped that in the end. But still, it's a part of my life, and it's something that people that go to Japan really like, and the cuisine is really, really taken off of late. So it's something I include in the books. It's quite fun. You have to set a scene someplace, so why not be in one of the, 25 or 30 different kinds of cuisines they have in Japan?
Right, and that way you can make your readers really hungry. but the book the part of the book that takes place in Japan doesn't just take place in Tokyo. You have Jim Brody and a couple of people from his agency going, and a member of the Tokyo, which police department? The Tokyo Police Department?
Yes.
Going off to Kyoto. And what I found that really interesting because I think most Western tourists think of Kyoto as the ancient capital of Japan. But it's also the location of a vibrant manga and cosplay scene, which is where fans dress as characters from the manga world. That must have been really cool to research, the idea of cosplay and manga.
It was a lot of fun because it's the pop culture. And It's a way a lot of people discovered Japan. Back in the early days, it might have been through Zen and Buddhism, and some people still find it that way, or through the art, or some other aspect of the culture. But the younger generation these days comes through anime or manga. And there's this wonderful the International Manga Museum of Kyoto now that's opened up in an old elementary school that they've refashioned for that purpose, and it's quite interesting. And so Kyoto, which is the ancient Japanese capital, or one of them, is kind of now this combination of old and new. And so there's some traditional things, of which I show a couple in the book, and then there's this newer culture, that which is what the younger generation is more interested in.
And you write about that in your acknowledgments. You're talking about, you have something at the end of the book that's like what's true and what's not, and you do talk about Kyoto and some of the more interesting things that you can pursue and that museum, and it actually made me really want to go. Have your books been translated into Japanese? And if so, how have they been received?
Well, it's interesting. They haven't. There's talk now about Japanese translations off and on. That hasn't happened. They've been translated into French and German. And Japantown, which is the first book in the series, is now in 8 or 9 languages. I've sort of lost count. And so it's moving along. The Japanese one hasn't really happened yet, but I'm in no hurry. I write these books for everybody else but the Japanese. So, if that makes sense, because I've lived there for several decades, and so I want to show through mysteries and thrillers what, the things I'm seeing over there, and so I'm in no hurry for a Japanese translation. That said, Japanese people that have contacted me who have read the books in English really seem to like them, so they seem to be effective for Japanese readers as well, which is not something I really shot for, but it seems to be working. So eventually when they are translated, I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
I think it would be because the few Japanese mysteries that I've read, written by Japanese writers that have been translated into English, are very different in approach than sort of the American English approach to crime fiction. I'm thinking specifically of the devotion of the devotion of Suspect X.
That's right, yeah.
And the way the story is told and the way the scene is set is very, very different from, to me, it was very, very different.
No, I think you're right. There's a different sensibility. And for the Japanese, you know, mysteries and, well, as we, Sherlock Holmes, which you and I talked a little bit about before we this broadcast, and the sort of traditional Western-style mystery as it's developed in the States and the UK and elsewhere, is something rather new to Japan. And it's only been, say, from the middle of the last century that they started to do it. So they're sort of taken up the mystery story from reading Western mysteries, old and new. And so, I don't know, there's a sort of tentative quality there, and there's a little more laid-back quality, a little more passive-aggressive sort of thing going on.
Well, back to Pacific Burn.
Uh-huh.
You know, I thought the character of Cherie Copeland, the Sioux Center City forensic sketch artist, I thought her character was really, really interesting. And is there a chance we might see her coming up in an upcoming Jim Brodey mystery, which is sort of a roundabout way of asking what's next for Jim Brodey?
You know, it's interesting because I've had several people now say that to me, and there's just the early advanced readers at the moment, but I'm going to have to seriously consider that because people really seem to be taking a liking to her. She's based on a character. I met a very professional police sketch artist quite by accident up north when I was up in Northern California, and I thought, well, I should really talk to her. And so we sat down, and I had her take me through the whole routine. I sort of made up. I picked a friend who and made him a perp, and then I had her draw. She asked me all these questions, and we went through the whole process in great detail, and it was just a lot of fun. And she's very accurate. And she really knows her. She was a police detective as well. And so that character sort of came alive. She's feisty. She's smart. And she knows police work in and out. So that's a long way of saying I'm considering that now.
Well, I thought all the characters were interesting, but I really thought she popped out. And maybe it was because you did a fairly deep dive into the research for this particular character, but I thought she was great. I thought the way she handled the witness that she had to interview was terrific. There was a language barrier, there was an age barrier, the finesse and the detail that she went into turned out to be a key in the story. You know, it's something that she did, that she rendered, that sort of opened up the solution to the mystery.
And yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think because she was the woman who I interviewed, who was an actual police officer and detective up in Northern California, she was also an artist on the side, which is she was an artist on the side, and then she decided to combine both her, you know, her career and her personal interest. And so she's got a depth and around this that it took me a while. I had to sit and play with it for a while, but I was able to bring that out. And I added a few other things that she sort of hinted at. And I'm glad to hear that's worked out well. Yeah, I was very happy with the way that turned out.
So what is next for Jim Brodey? Are you working on your next novel with him?
Yeah, the fourth book, I'm working on that now. The third book, Pacific Burn, has a return of there's a regular crew of characters that show up. Noda, his sidekick, is there, and his daughter's there, and Rena, the San Francisco police detective, is there. For the fourth book, some of those people show up, and also there's going to be there's a Chinese spy that was in Tokyo Kill. He was a very popular character in that book, and so he's going to show up as well in the fourth book, I think, and that book will take some different directions. But yes, I'm working on the fourth book and the fifth one, actually, when I have free time, which isn't too often, I'm thinking about that as well.
Well, you know, don't let the grass grow under your feet. You know, you have to sort of keep keep moving with this. Has there been any interest in bringing Jim Brody to either the big or the small screen?
Well, when Japantown came out, a guy called, what was that fellow's name, J.J. Abrams?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah, he did a small movie recently that people were talking about every once in a while.
Oh, yes, a star
something. Or other, yeah. His Bad Robot was interested. They auctioned it, the series and the character, for a TV show initially. And there was a script done, and I think that sort of fizzled, and he did get subsumed, steamrolled, is probably closer to more accurate, by the Star Wars phenomenon. And so that's kind of fallen by the wayside, it looks like. But there was strong interest there. And then now there's some talk about a Netflix series for Brody. And so we'll see what happens. There is talk going around here and there. And,
well, before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about content and outlets that are seeking content. And I think these Amazon, which is doing Bosch,
right,
and Netflix, which is continuing the Longmire series, I think there's such a voracious appetite for crime fiction and crime fiction adaptations. That, at least in the United States, we've sort of consumed everything that the BBC and the ITV and the UK outlets have created, and we want more.
Actually, I think you're absolutely right. I think that with Netflix, all the British stuff from the British Isles has been shown here, and people just love it, and they want more. The reason the J.J. Abrams people liked the Jim Brody character was because he had this insider knowledge that other people didn't, just like your classic detective like Sherlock Holmes, or like the two examples I was given was Sherlock Holmes and Monk, the TV Monk, without any of the major psychological problems. But Brody has this ability to see something, look at a scene, and see it in ways that nobody else can see, and that's because he's got...
Well, he's an artist, or he has an appreciation of art, and he can see things. I think one of the things that struck me is it seemed like he could visualize in three dimensions, and that's not something everybody could do. Architects can do it, and sculptors, and people like Brody who deal in things like tea bowls. He can visualize the inside and the outside and the proportions. And that seemed to me to be a very, very unique talent and something that would help in perceiving situations as well.
He has a sort of deep understanding of two cultures, Japan and the U.S., and plus other parts of Asia. And so it's funny, when you learn something very well and you go very deep into something, it can expand your sort of perceptions of other things as well, if that makes sense. And it's sort of your knowledge and your understanding can increase exponentially. It doesn't just double. And I think that's the kind of thing I try to convey with him.
And also, just going with Jim and his friends to Japanese restaurants would be so great. Well, I appreciate the time you gave me, Barry, and I'm looking forward to the next Jim Brody. Have you got a title for it for number four?
I do. I have a very good title. I'm told I shouldn't hand it out. I'm sorry to say, but I have a title I'm very happy with. It won't be... Japantown was a one- or two-word title, depending on how you divide it.
Depending on what your managing editor said, whether you had to put a break in there or not.
Right. And so you had Japantown and then Tokyo Kill and now Pacific Burn. But the next title will be not a two-word title. It's going to be a little bit longer, I can tell you that much. At least at this moment. The titles have a way of changing. The title did pop into my head, and so we'll see. And I'm living with it now. It seems to be very, very good.
Well, this is one of those things where you could tell me, but then you'd have to kill me. And I'd rather live another day
there you go.
In order to read the next Jim Brody. Thank you again, Barry, and I so appreciate your time.
Thank you, and it was a lot of fun chatting with you.